Hello, and welcome to the COE Lecture Series, where we bring you guest lectures, talks, and discussions on a variety of topics related to education, teaching, learning, and instructional technologies. This is Episode 2, an audio podcast. In this episode, Dr. Ed Delgado Romero and others discuss race and ethnicity.
I'm Ed Delgado Romero. I'm Kimber's advisor. So that's my main role in life. I'm an associate professor here in the counseling department. And this research presentation, we're going to talk about about the issues of race and ethnicity, especially the effect of reporting those things on science, production of science, and then also some of the effects in terms of how that really affects what we know about human beings and how that really flavors social justice and education and all kinds of implications in terms of the way that we think about race and ethnicity. Dr. Oliver said, my two pride and joys here, my two doc students who each are working on a section of this project. It's a bigger project. You'll see just how big it is in a couple of minutes, but they have taken the main role in two facets of this. Basically, our guiding questions, what I wanted to know, I thought, when I asked people if they thought that when people did research, that do they report the race and ethnicity of their subjects, their participants, is that universal? And most people said, yes, of course, it's in ethical guidelines, it's part of your research class, of course it is. And so I just wanted to see if that was the case, and you'll see what we found. And then I wanted to know, how does the way that we collect and report this data affect science and then public policy in terms of research coming out of about people? And then what are the implications for education and social justice? We did three studies that covered the years 1990 to 1999. We looked at 11 premier journals in different fields that we'll talk to you about. We reviewed 1,917 articles and gathered data on 1,120,000 research participants. So basically over a 10-year period, this is what we looked at in terms of how these folks are described, because from this comes what we know about people, especially in the field of counseling. And these are some of the other folks who worked with us on the study. It was definitely a group effort. What is race or ethnicity? Probably don't have to tell anybody in this room, just kind of go over it real quickly. It's a way to classify human beings. It has origins in terms of, with a person named Linnaeus, in terms of the modern way that we understand it, where he split the races into certain groups, the Caucasians and so forth. Very similar to the biological model in which you can kind of break down animals by their subtypes and stuff. As we know, race is purported to have a biological basis and is often correlated to other characteristics, for example, intelligence. Ethnicity is different, but it refers to the group affiliation and usually is seen as optional for whites and essential for people of color, meaning that for people of color, everything about them has to deal with their ethnicity, and for whites, ethnicity is usually optional. It's something that you take on and off and that you can either decide to have, but it's not seen as an essential part of who you are. And I'm reminded that this comes after St. Patrick's Day, which is probably the biggest optional ethnicity day in the entire year in the U.S. So we were all Irish on Saturday. The government does mandate the way that race and ethnicity is reported through the Office of Management and Budget. It sets a minimum standard for the way that race and ethnicity is collected in the United States, and that any project that goes through the government or funded by the government must report ethnicity and race. In the U.S., ethnicity has one definition in terms of the government. The government defines ethnicity in modern times is you're either Hispanic or you're not. That's it. There are no other ethnicities. So one must first answer, are you Hispanic or not? And then one must answer, are you which race are you? The definitions from the government in terms of who is who, and I found these interesting, because this comes right from the governmental reports for the U.S. For Hispanics, is a person of Cuban, Mexican, Puerto Rican, South or Central American, or other Spanish culture or origin, regardless of race. The term Spanish origin can also be used in addition. Okay? So an interesting definition that it's almost can apply to almost anyone, especially when you throw in, it's not only where you're from, it's the culture, it's your origin, and then in modern day United States thinking, being Hispanic is separate from whatever race you are, which is news to me, and is news to my parents when they immigrated to this country, that all of a sudden now they had an ethnicity and a race, which wasn't at all the way they thought of themselves, but I'm getting ahead of myself. American Indian or Alaska Native, a person having origin in any of the original people of North, Central, or South America, and who maintain a tribal affiliation or community attachment. Which is interesting because this is the only definition in which you see that you must maintain a tribal affiliation or a community attachment. And you notice the Latino one didn't say that you had to have a community attachment. So very interesting. An Asian is a person having origins in any of the original peoples of the Far East, Southeast Asia, or the Indian subcontinent. Previously, people from the Philippines has been classified as Pacific Islanders. Now they're classified as Asian. You could even classify them as Hispanics because they were conquered by the Spanish, and so many of them speak Spanish or have Spanish names, Imelda Marcos and stuff like that. So there's a big Spanish influence. So depending on how you define a group, they may end up in one of these categories. Black or African American, a person having origins in any of the black racial groups of Africa. Terms such as Haitian or Negro can also be used in addition to black or African American. And when I read this to my research team, they were pretty amazed that the term Negro was still being used by the government and in science. We didn't find hardly any incidences of that actually being used in the research. However, the government still has that. But it's interesting. So Haitian can be used in addition. Native Hawaiian or other Pacific Islander, a person having origins in any of the original peoples of Hawaii, Guam, Samoa, or other Pacific Islands, used to be Philippines, now they're not. And then white, a person having origins in any of the original peoples of Europe, the Middle East, or North Africa, the original peoples. I'm not sure exactly what that means, depending on who you talk to, it would be interesting. So. Part of the interesting way that the government kind of puts these racial characteristics out is somehow that these are kind of distinct groups that you can kind of trace back and you can belong and check one box or another. Now, you do have the option of checking other boxes, but we'll get to that. The OMB, the government does encourage you to collect more detail. However, if you do collect more detail, that you have to be able to put it back into the smaller categories as well. You do have an option of multiple races, and that has been increasingly used in the census, but it really was something that people had to fight to get as part of the government, was the idea that you could actually be in multiple races. And ethnicity used to come second, now it absolutely has to come first, and that's the current understanding, is your ethnicity, Hispanic or not, and then you pick a race.
So now, Ed, there's not an other
anymore?
Or is that, was that more with the race piece?
You can choose other race. You can choose other race, and I think research has shown that that is mostly, in the present way the census is collected now, that is mostly whites who do not want to be categorized, and so they choose some other race or they choose other. In college admissions, which is interesting, the University of Georgia mandates that you have to report your race in the application process. And every single instance that I've seen that someone checks some other race, it is a white student who somehow feels that they're going to be disadvantaged through this process by identifying themselves as white. Yeah, there are other options, but this is the main thing. So are these categories scientific? And I will tell you a resounding no. Absolutely, they are not scientific. They're political. For example, Hispanics. In the 1920s, Mexicans were counted as a race. So it was white, black, Asian, or Mexican. The reason why was because of the widespread taking over of formerly Mexican lands. And so as some type of protection, they were classified as a race. That was replaced. And for a while, the census would classify people by Spanish mother tongue, that you spoke Spanish. For a while, the census, people who did the census would actually look at a person, and that's how they classified race. They were trained to look at features, and that's how they classified. Currently, it's an ethnicity, but that just shows you in terms of the history of Latinos in the United States, how races are conceptualized changes throughout time, and it really changes to reflect the political thinking rather than scientific thinking. Now, the intersection between the two is that most people use these categories as if they were scientific categories, in terms of there's a basis, there's distinctions that you can, you know, replicate, that these are groups that you can tell apart. So the main questions for science, especially for counseling, is the issue of inclusion. Are racial ethnic minorities included in the production of scientific knowledge? Out of the research, what we know about human beings, do we include people who are not white? In this country, the whites are the dominant group. Secondary question, are whites considered the norm? If race is unstated, or if the majority of people who are researched are white, then does that become a norm? And if they are a norm, then you probably compare racial ethnic groups to whites as a comparison. Again, the unstated things being said, this is the norm, this is the normal. In science, you know, you either manipulate variables or you simply describe things. And simply describing something is thought to be lower level than manipulating a variable and things like that. So when there's inclusion, the questions we wanted to know, are they only described? Are they compared to whites? And is it focused on pathology? In terms of the history of psychology, usually when you talked about difference in racial ethnic minorities, you talked about how they were crazy or the levels of depression or just all the negatives about them. And then we wanted to know, how is this data collected? And is it salient to participants? Is it meaningful to, when you fill out, check your little box, does that mean anything to you? Does it change depending on your mood or your situation? If you're sitting at the University of Georgia filling out a form, would you fill it out differently than if you were sitting in Spelman filling it out at a historically black college? So what we did was to look at the research over 10 years in the counseling psychology journals, the vocational journals or career journals, and then the journals that had a specific racial ethnic focus. What we did is we asked senior professionals to nominate journals. We looked at the ones with the highest impact factor. So the journals that have the biggest impact or the most prestigious ones, we looked at them because they define the subcategories. And then we also compared them to we compared what we found to the census categories, and we recorded any time that a study went above and beyond and provided labels that were beyond Hispanic. So for example, if someone is described as Cuban, Dutch, or Chicano, we noticed whenever those further elaborations were in there. The first study was by myself and some of my students at Indiana University, where I used to be a professor at. And it was published in the Counseling Psychologist in 2005. It included the three journals, Counseling Psychologist, the Journal of Counseling and Development, and the Journal of Counseling Psychology. So why do we pick this field other than the fact that it's my field and that's what I'm trained in? Well, counseling psychology in psychology actually has a reputation for engaging the issues of race and ethnicity at a much higher level. There's leaders in this area. So counselors and counseling psychologists really have taken this issue on. So it wouldn't prove much to take a look at another field that doesn't really say that this is a value. So we decided to start with this. Reviewed 796 studies that were published in those journals. 57%, only 57% reported race or ethnicity at all. So 43% of people were not identified. They were just people. So, you know, in science, if you think about it, could you imagine an animal study being done in which a scientist says, well, I studied birds. Yeah. it wouldn't make any sense.
Or a mammal.
Huh?
Or I studied a mammal.
Yeah, a mammal or whatever. And so 78% of the participants reported that they were white, 7% African American, 7% Hispanic, 6% Asian, 0.9% American Indian, and 0.1% multiracial. Of that research, 53% of it was university-based, 98% of those at predominantly white institutions. So one of the things is half of your knowledge is coming from college sophomores at predominantly white institutions. Yet, no one says this is a study about depression of college sophomores at a predominantly white institution. They say this is a study about depression. 14% were actually focused on race and ethnicity, which is much higher than psychology in general. 4% of the studies included international folks, and one of the things is that people don't tend to differentiate international people from people of color or even U.S. whites. They just kind of throw them in there. So only 4% of the studies really included the fact that they had international folks. 9% provided information on country of origin, which is important. Only 6% about anything to do about acculturation, how do people learn about the culture of the United States, and only 3% provide generational status, which is very important, especially for those people who are immigrants to this country. Are you dealing with someone like my parents who were immigrants, or someone like me who's first generation? Is that a factor? But you never did hear about that. When you did have a focus on racial ethnic minorities, 90% of the research was quantitative, meaning, you know, it had to do with numbers. 28% was descriptive, in terms of just describe things the way they are. And as you remember earlier, I said that was kind of a lower level of science. 14% was race comparative, where racial ethnic minorities were compared to white. And 8% was focused on pathology. And actually, these numbers were a lot better than they were the previous years before then. So only 8% of the studies were focused on pathology. Then the next study, I will hand it over to Eliza, who spearheaded this particular part of it.
Well, looking at the previous research, I guess it was interesting for us to try to expand this to different levels of psychology and seeing if these statistics or these percentages would show up in a different area, and we chose to do career vocational psychology. Did the same study, replicated the previous one, 1990 to 1999, and used the four major journals from surveying professionals and finding the highest impact factor, and we got the Career Development Quarterly, Journal of Career Development, Journal of Vocational Behavior, and Journal of Career Assessment. And we chose vocational psychology because vocational psychology or career research has been an element of the identity of counseling psychology. And as traditional career theories have focused mostly on European American, the needs of European Americans. And as our field becomes more diverse and as psychology becomes more diverse and as we become more diverse as professionals, I feel like the need for focusing on the needs of diverse people becomes more important as well. And so just kind of looking at in this study, see if that has happened in the past 10 years, 1999. You can go to that. We looked at 620 studies and found the following profile: 71% white, 11% African American, 7% Hispanic, Latino, Latina, 7% Asian American, 0.28% American Indian, Alaskan Native, 0.07% multi-biracial, and 68% of the participants were not even identified at all. So of the ones that were, that was the profile, but 68% of 620 studies, participants weren't even identified at all. So we see how alarming that is.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Yeah.
Only 2.3% of all the studies provided information on generational or acculturation status. 93% of the studies provided crosstab by gender and race, which was good. 86% of the studies did not even say how race was determined, which was also alarming. 2% did it through interviews, and 12% used the checklist. 8% of the studies were descriptive, and 4% were race comparative.
Yeah, we always want to know how you know what you know, and you know, did you measure it or did you just have it reported? Most people don't say. They just said we had X number of these folks. And
right.
Well, how do you know? Was it someone else ranking? Did they identify themselves? How did they know? And most of the time we don't know how they know.
Because a lot of them didn't even say how they figured it out. Yeah. 53% were recruited from the community and 37% from universities. Of the university populations, 9% of the participants were from predominantly white institutions, but however, 47% didn't even say, so we're not sure, you know, if that percentage would be higher or lower, considering 2% were from minority serving institutions, but with that, almost half of them not even reporting which university they were, it was interesting to know we wouldn't even know that. Mm-hmm. 17% were international participants, which was pretty high compared to the other, I guess, journals that we've looked at. 3% used both international and U.S. populations, but half didn't even say. So we're seeing this trend in this group of research that a lot of things are not being reported. Mm-hmm. 5% of the studies were qualitative, 88% quantitative, and 8% were mixed.
And then I looked at racial and diversity focused journals, and the reasons that we looked at these journals is because we would think that race and diversity focused journals would have information pertinent to racial and ethnic minorities. And the journals that we looked at were the Journal of Black Psychology, which is a publication of the Association of Black Psychologists, APSI. And these APSI dates back to 1974. The Hispanic Journal of Behavioral Sciences, which is a multidisciplinary journal which focuses primarily on Hispanic persons. Cultural Diversity and Ethnic Minority Psychology, and unlike the other journals, we only looked at from 1995 to 1999 because that's when they began, and they're formally known as the Ethnic Diversity and Mental Health Journal. And they are affiliated with APA's Vision 45, the Society for Psychology Study, for the Psychology Study of Ethnic Minority Issues, which Dr. Delgado Romero is now a fellow. So, wow. Congratulations.
You didn't have to say that, but thank you. Good one.
And then the Journal of Multicultural Counseling and Development, which is a publication of ACA, American Counseling Association. In this study, we looked at 499 studies, and as you can see, overwhelmingly, the majority of the studies came from the Hispanic Journal of Behavioral Sciences, 45%, and within that, they had 76% of all the participants. And this may be a little bit skewed because some of the research looked at in there could have used census data, which may be one of the reasons why there's so many people being represented in that, and it's not representative of the other three journals. So thinking about the populations that would be in the ethnic and minority focused journals, you would think that the majority of the participants would be ethnic and minority persons. But what we found was pretty surprising that 31% of the people in these journals were white or European American. And that makes you wonder, once again, are we generalizing about ethnic minority populations using white participants? And then also another implication may be that some Hispanic persons do self-identify as white, so it could have something to do with that as well. But then 9% of the research participants were black, 25% Hispanic, 3% Asian, less than 1% were American Indian, 0.00%, less than that were biracial, and then there were 3% again who were not identified, which even though 3% is a lower number than the other journals that were reported non-identified, it still is a pretty significant number. And as I previously mentioned, the Hispanic Journal of Behavioral Sciences had the largest number of whites, and they had 74% of all the white participants. They had 96% of Hispanic participants, 49% of American Indians, and then 77% of the all unidentified persons. So they were reporting the most people, but they also had lots of people who were unidentified. The Journal of Black Psychology had 52% African Americans, 59% multiracial persons, and that could have something to do with the historical context of the way African Americans or blacks are, or what it means to be black in this society, that if you have any black ancestry that you would be considered black. So the multiracial persons identified may have been targeted because they would be considered black by, I guess, historical standards. And then 65% of Asian Americans were in the Cultural Diversity and Ethnic Minority Psychology Journal. Looking at the cross-tabulation between gender and race, it was pretty positive that 81% of them did look at how gender interacts and intersects with race and ethnicity. And again, there was 59% of the respondents didn't say how the race was determined, so we don't know if they used interviews or if they self-identified or what made the person's race what it was or salient to them. 68% were recruited from community populations and 29% were from colleges, and only 4% of the colleges were minority institutions, so predominantly the colleges were coming from predominantly white institutions. 87% were quantitative studies, 8% qualitative study, and 5% were mixed. And 12% of the studies included international populations, and the other ones didn't say if the populations were, 20% didn't say if they were international students or not included. And then looking at these journals, 60% of them were descriptive, 31 of them were race comparative, and when it was race comparative, it was usually compared to white populations, and 9% were neither descriptive nor race comparative. 95% of them did have a specific minority-focused journal, which is what we were anticipating finding. And then 34% of the information was, 34% of the journals did report information on acculturation or generational status. And looking at that again, it was overwhelmingly coming from the Hispanic Journal of Behavioral Sciences that they were reporting on acculturation.
This is the comparison of all three studies to the census data over the same period of time. And the green means that they're overrepresented relative to the U.S. population. And the brownish red means underrepresented. And as you look through to compare to, so in terms of diversity, whites were underrepresented, and everything else was overrepresented. In terms of career, you have underrepresented of everyone except for Asians, but not by much in some of the cases. And in counseling psych study, the first study, you had whites and Asians overrepresented and everyone else underrepresented. So, you know, the degree of which is what we talk about later. What does it even mean to be underrepresented? But if you're trying to see who does a snapshot of the U.S. population is reflected in their work, well, the career field seems to be most likely, most like the U.S. population, even though they had the most unreported. But in terms of when they did report it, they tended to look at it. An interesting finding is no matter what field you're in, you have an over-representation of Asians in every field, which is, I don't know, you know, what does it mean? We can talk about that. What does it mean? But that's the comparison of the three studies. So the three studies, again, were from 1990 to 1999, 11 premier journals, 1,917 articles, 1,120,000 participants, and on average, 45% of all participants, which is 504,000 participants, were not identified. So you have these, that stuff. So if you go back to here and you're saying, this is just on half the data. This is what half the data looks like. And you have another group of equal size, nearly equal size, saying over here that we don't know what it is. Yeah, but we have some ideas. We do believe that those are mostly when race and ethnicity is not collected, it is mostly white participants. That is my hypothesis, because it's just not needed to say. Why would you need to say it if you have white participants? It seems like why would you need to say it? Because most journals will make you say if it is minorities, they will really point that out. So on based on half the data over 10 years, this is what we find. So our limitations, we didn't look at studies that didn't use research participants but have been focused on relevant issues, for example, theoretical or editorial things. So that, you know, some might say, well, there was a lot of thinking on this subject. Okay, that's fine, but that's not what we looked at. And then what constitutes the domain of diversity-focused publications? That's the most vague. Career is pretty clear. Counseling is very clear. But what constitutes diversity-focused publications? Is the most vague, and we have studied, and the lack of an Asian American, Native American, white, or bi-multicultural focused journals means that the results may be skewed to the groups that have their own journals. For example, African Americans and Hispanics have their own focused journal that's what it's about. So that might be also an issue. So you have to hesitate the most when you're talking about this area, because that's although those are the leading journals in the field in terms of that are focused, there's still some missing in terms of there's no journals that have a specific focus at least stated on some of these groups.
So Ed, what about the piece that people are, there's a, you know, folklore or fact, uh-huh, that a lot of times the minority research isn't competitive in our sort of upper tier. I mean,
right.
Is that one of the pieces that y'all, is that?
We talked about that.
Yep.
You're in your piece?
Tell me. You want to answer that?
No, I was just saying that we found it, and even talking to Dr. Delgado Romero about his own experiences with colleagues and things about how that's really true, that a lot of the minority-focused research isn't what's published, mm-hmm, in the main journals that we're seeing, or is not looked at maybe as popular research.
And that person's doing research on ethnic populations may be marginalized because,
right,
of tenure status and whatnot. If they're not reporting their publications in major journals, then, you know, it would be more difficult for them.
Mm-hmm.
the lack of the major, the counseling journals, if you look at this, in terms of if I'm a faculty member trying to get tenure, these are the ones that count the most, that's second, and that's third. And that's just the ranking of in terms of prestige and what people think of. Well, if you're looking at this journal, you're facing an uphill battle of publishing anything but white research. That's a problem because of the way that the way this, so yes, does it affect tenure? It does affect tenure decisions. It does, who will publish your research? And also folks in these journals might say, well, go put that in the Hispanic journal. Right. Well, go put that in the African American journal because, you know, we're talking about people, even though that they, you know, that's one of the problems. When compared to the population, we talked about Asians being overrepresented. Blacks, Hispanics, and American Indians, Alaska Natives were underrepresented. When compared to general counseling research and diversity-focused research, career research did a better job of representing the U.S. population, what the U.S. population is like, if that's a value of yours. Now, some people don't care, but I mean, if it's a value to really look at, should your research reflect who's in your community, then that might be important to you. And so really some of the questions that we were going to throw around and just and leave time for your reactions or questions, because we have tons of data and there's stuff we didn't even get into, is that how do we understand over and under representation in the research? Are there certain populations that it's better to study, or what does that mean if they're studied more? Is that a good, a bad thing? And specifically, why are Asians consistently overrepresented in research and Blacks and Hispanics underrepresented? I have some ideas, but we can see what you think. And then most studies seem to be using the census categories and really not examining at all what these roles that race or ethnicity plays in people's lives or even the salience, what that means to them in that category. And you can have people in the same category who have polar different ideas about what their race or ethnicity means to them, but yet this is not at all examined. The implications for us is if this is the way that the research is being produced, then also what's the role of us as a College of Education, of IRB boards, to make sure, of journal editors, to make sure that these things are reported accurately, that these questions are being asked. You can say, well, this is 1999, you know, a lot of time has passed since then, I'm sure it's different now, but we see it's an empirical question. I'm a reviewer for several journals, and I still see research that comes across that says, you know, 1,000 Australians. And so and I wrote them back and said, okay, was there any other thing other than they were Australian? Are there any, were they Aborigine? What exactly? Well, we don't know. We just collect these large number of data and then we say it. It's about human beings. So let me open up to talk about questions or discussions about, you know, we just kind of wanted to provoke some thinking about this and see what your reactions are. And Kimber and Eliza can answer all the questions. Yeah.
Your figure of 57% not being, I think, was the earlier figure of not even reporting. Mm-hmm. And so I wondered what you and maybe the other the audience thinks about why would this be the case? Do you think, and I'm sure there are several reasons, but do you think that researchers may not report that unless the research question specifically involves ethnicity or some factor of diversity, so that they're unaware, at a level of awareness or absence of it, to think that there could be differential perceptions based upon how one views oneself, even if the subject on the face of it doesn't seem to be. Did that make you sense?
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm.
I mean, think about the assumption of the backdrop that sets up, though. I mean, you know, that the norm group is the white group. So if the question is of inquiring about race or ethnicity or whatever, then why bother?
But if it is not,
why even talk about it, you know?
Well, it also makes me wonder, because I run into this as a reviewer, too, all the time, and I'm constantly asking people, who are these people? You know, give me more data on, you know, ethnicity, race, gender, age, all of those things. I want demographics on who they are so I can start painting a picture of what I'm looking at. But it makes me wonder if what we're doing in terms of preparing people in research methods classes. How much is that emphasized in our methods classes? And this is important data to collect and to report when you talk about your participants.
We discuss this as graduate students and in our undergrad programs and in a master's program that the research we did have a spot for race, ethnicity, but then when we actually reported or looked at our findings, those things weren't included in there. So even if we asked for it, for some reason, it didn't seem as though it was important or a salient reason to identify that within our report, which could be that thinking that the norm is the majority of the participants are white, therefore I guess it does apply to everyone, but I think there was definitely lacking in how it is taught in research methods.
My suspiciousness is always if it benefits the researcher, I'm very suspicious of it. So as long as the researcher doesn't, you said it's unassumed or they didn't think about it. Well, it benefits them because then they don't have to look at it. Mm-hmm. One of the things we know is if you're truly going to engage with racial, ethnic, minority issues, it's expensive and it's more time consuming than other types of research because you have to build up these populations. If you truly look at what makes a difference in people's lives, you're going to start dividing that number down and down and down, and then all of a sudden, instead of a group of 1,000, you have 20 or 30 smaller groups, and then all of a sudden your statistics start blowing up on you, and that's not okay, and you know what I'm saying? So it's very convenient to keep these big groups, because the minute you start looking at meaningful differences, then you have to ask, why am I not slicing it further down? There's been some research even done within minority groups that like, for example, for Hispanics, that if you do look meaningfully at generation, country of origin, that you will find differences in that group. But immediately what that means is that your research has just gotten tons more expensive and tons more complicated. Because now you have to collect this data, and now you have to make sure that you have enough Cubans and Colombians and Mexicans, and now all of a sudden, if that's the variable of interest. I guess as a scientist, I'm just concerned, why is that automatically assumed not to be a variable of interest? That's...
It seems, and I'm thinking, that unless the research question, and I think what you just said is absolutely true, because right. Once there's only three or four people in a cell,
right.
Your statistics advisor says.
That's noise.
But I'm beginning to think, given what you said here, that unless the research question has to do with diversity, that researchers presume that different people wouldn't think about the subject differently. That we would all think all of diverse variables or identities would think the same if the research question is not based on ethnicity.
And that's a violation of scientific principles.
Which is really pretty profound when you think about it.
Mm-hmm. Isn't the ultimate goal of research is to get to the core of the problem? If we can fix the white people, we can fix most of them.
You know, that may be.
That's what I was going to talk about, too, is that when we think about training and graduate classes and research methods, getting to the results, what does this study say? What is your mm-hmm. final statement that you're making from this? And like kind of what Dr. Delgado Romero was saying, if you're doing a study on depression in college students, but all your participants were white, then how can you say that applies to African-American college students? How you can apply to Hispanic students? So, I mean, when I think about training, I want to know why this is important more so than just that we need to give as much credit as possible, but at the same time, what are we saying with this research? And I think I didn't get that a lot coming up, and I think I've thought about these things, but I didn't really realize how important this was until I did this research here, that it's very important how we're generalizing these results to everyone when they're not studied on everyone. They're not representative of the population that we see the percentages on our chart. If it's not representative of the population, then how are we going to generalize these results to everybody? So that's kind of what I got from here, seeing how important reporting race and ethnicity really is. So.
I don't have any problem with focusing on the biggest group. I think that you should focus on the biggest group, and that's the majority. A lot of your work should come, you know, by groups like that. That makes a lot of sense to look at the way that the largest group and to do the biggest good. The question is, if you're not even reporting on it, there's just assumptions that underlie that whole thing that this is the norm, and that's what concerns me. But you're right on the saying that, you know, if you do have 75% of the population, you should pay attention to that group. It's pretty big, so it's what they experience is important, but it's not the only thing that's experienced.
I think what's really scary is there's been such a big push for evidence-based or empirically supported practices and manualization of treatments, and these evidence supported are, you know, they are true, it's evidence-based, but then who is the evidence for? And when we have these manuals, who are we using these manuals on? And it might not even be applicable to those populations that we're using.
I was also struck by the emphasis on quantitative research instead of qualitative, and especially in light of one of your last questions that you posed, that you're not, you know, that they're not examining the role or salience. And how would you get a hold of that on, you know, from a quantitative perspective? How would you start doing some of that and unpacking what does it mean when I check white, you know, on a box? What does that mean to me?
Yeah.
And so is it, this is a curiosity question, is that just not a method, you know, are qualitative methods just not used?
Most of the methods to look at, like identity, have terrible properties in the sense that the psychometrically they don't hold up. There are exceptions. The cross-racial identity scale has wonderful properties and actually is got all the hallmarks of a good scale. It's invariant and, you know, so the cross is one. That's probably the gold standard. After that, you have problems with a lot of self-report data. You just don't have really good ways to get at what that means. And some people would even say it's because what you think of yourself and what that means to you shifts.
Sure.
So I was telling these guys last night, you know, I was at a birthday party and all of a sudden I realized I was the only Latino in the room other than my kids. In the room, and so if you would have asked me then about my race or ethnicity, it would have meant a lot to me then. But sitting out in the softball game yesterday, watching the thing, it didn't really, that wasn't something that struck me. I didn't really start going, probably other than the players was the only Latino person there too, but it just didn't really strike me as much as it did in the other context. So really a lot of this is contextual, what identity comes first. You know, other times I might think that my male identity comes first, my American identity. So that's also true that the race doesn't operate in a uniform way across. It's not, you know, sometimes it's more salient to you than others.
Mm-hmm. Like most white people don't understand they're white until they find themselves in the ghetto. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Before, you never knew what your race was. It's meaningless to you 99% of the time.
Right. You have that immersion experience, and all of a sudden you're in familiar. You have that identity as being the minority. It's just not something you've ever faced. We have parallels with that with other groups too. For example, when I was a professor at the University of Florida, we had people come up from Miami who were Cuban, who never knew that everyone in the world wasn't Cuban and wasn't, you know, and didn't, you know, and when people said to them, "Oh, you're Hispanic," they're like, "Whoa, what are you talking about?" You know, it's also works in that way too. It's this, it's an encounter with something that's different from what you've been raised around. Mm-hmm. And then it becomes important. But then the idea that your identity really is important only in relation to those people who are different than you, that's also an interesting concept. Mm-hmm. That it doesn't work at other times. It works maybe below the conscious surface, or I hate conscious, awareness.
And something else to consider is who's doing the research.
Right.
That if it's white persons doing the majority of the research, which it is, then they may have more of an interest in looking at white populations. So that makes sense that you can identify with things that are easily and readily available in your conscious or awareness. And so that overwhelmingly it is research done on white persons, I guess that's not surprising in that sense. And some of the things such as still being in the contact phase or immersion phase, that some of these things wouldn't be salient because of white racial identity.
Mm-hmm. Or even looking, when you think about participants, the convenience of your sample. If we were to do research here at this university, myself, I might have more white participants because I'm at a predominantly white university. It's easier to get a sample of people from here than if I said, well, I'm going to take time to go to a historically black college, I'm going to take time to go to a community college, I'm going to take time so I can get a diverse sample. It's easier to just, you know, or not just easier, but it makes more sense to get your sample from here where you're doing your work, and it might end up being that I have 75%, you know, white participants and a very small percentage of that. So I wonder how much that plays into this.
That's a great part too, yeah. But the other part of that too is that there's no history that, unless you talk about the Milgram studies, there's no, if you say research to most white folks, you're not going to get a history that comes up, for example, the Tuskegee studies or things. Mm-hmm. There's not a history of exploitation. There's not a history, you know, the mandatory ethics that we have to take. That doesn't come up. So there's not a trust issue automatically. Mm-hmm. And so that's another thing, too, is yes, you get a sample. People like wouldn't think anything of participating in research. However, that other sample, people who their identity as minorities is salient to them, may not want to be in your study because who knows what you're going to say next about me.
Mm-hmm. Your point, though, Eliza, makes me wonder about the attitude toward oversampling in some of these journals. Yeah. Sometimes that is resisted, and yet it becomes necessary if you don't have a ton of money to get a kind of representative sample. Oversampling is a reasonable strategy, but some people don't like to do that or don't respect that statistically. Do you have any sense of that?
No. I mean, yeah, you're right. I mean, it gets into two things. One is who controls the journals, and then who decides what is better research than other things and what methods are okay to have and those that aren't.
But also maybe your comment made me think about the oversampling of Asian populations, right? And if a lot of that's happening at higher education institutions, I mean, you know, we've got a high Asian population here. Mm-hmm. And so if it is convenient and we've got the population there, I mean, I think about my own department and the percentage of Asians that are represented in that department. If we were just looking at that as a convenient sample, then yeah, we're going to get a lot of, it'll be really skewed mm-hmm. because of the area that we're looking at. So that may pull into what you said a few minutes ago, too.
Other hypotheses on why the Asians are overrepresented?
I think it has to do with university population.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What you're saying.
So do you have plans to actually reach out directly to these journals to share this information? I mean, I know you're publishing this, but to really be very proactive in saying to these premier journals, look at this. You do?
Well, one of them is published in the premier journal. So
yes,
the
I
journal
know, but
counts,
you know,
like,
they don't always read their stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, like a letter to the editor might be a
well,
little bit
being
more
on the editorial boards, and I think publishing in those journals and then talking about that in terms, and then just quoting APA's own guidelines back to them, because if you followed the guidelines that they have in terms of how to report research data, then you wouldn't have the thought of not reporting at all who these people are is
exactly.
And one of the things in the original study I found is that people did all kinds of gymnastics to explain why they didn't report it, and some of them said the data was not available.
Yeah.
And I love that one. How is the data not available? It just, I don't know, just not available. You know, really, I mean, why don't you say, I didn't ask it, which is honest, but not available is somehow a problem. You know, I have reason to think that things are changing and getting more reflective. Scientifically, one of the biggest problems here is the ability to replicate data. And I know we have a bias in the field towards novel research and first, you know, significant effects, as in love with that, and, you know, the first time of study. But if you replicate these studies and you don't even know who was in the study, how can you replicate it? It's just a violation of scientific principles, which is why people in other fields always look to psychology and say, oh, you guys are the soft science. You know, you're not even following your own scientific principles. I will say, though, that my goal is not that we have a better classification system, because I think that is another road we don't necessarily want to go down, because, you know, when I was in D.C. visiting, like, the Holocaust Museum, it's very clear that the Nazis had one of the most advanced classification systems. The history of the United States with the rule of hypodescent or the one-drop rule, they had a classification system. Countries in South America had 8 terms for intermediaries between white and black. That's not what I'm saying that we need to get to. I'm saying we need to look at, first, what are we reporting, and then how do we get that data, what's the quality of it, and what does it mean to our participants? Then also, who's doing this? Who's conducting the research? Should it matter? Of the very little research that's available, and it's been found that when research is called cross-cultural research, it tends to be majority white researchers. If it's multicultural or diversity research in counseling, it is people of color. So even there's a split.
Mm-hmm.
there in terms of who's doing what. So if it's cross-cultural, you can do it. And that's a very complicated issue in terms of people feeling that they can actually do that and who has the right to do research. And it's really complicated. So I'm not going to say it's not simply some sinister plan for a certain group of people to do it. It's very complicated.
And then the publishing, our two pieces of research, looking at what journal will we use. Should we use one that is focused on multicultural diversity populations, or do we try to publish it in a counseling psychology focused journal where there might be more readers or persons that are going to look at that? I think it's a difficult decision to make. And
what are you leaning towards doing?
Whoever says yes.
That's a good answer.
Or saying who will accept it. Is this the research that right. is diversity focused research was going to be accepted in Journal of Counseling Psychology, or so
you're going to send it to start out with the premier and go from there?
Yeah,
again, it depends on the editor. I mean, it shouldn't depend on the editor, but it does depend on the editor. The editor, when I had this piece published, was someone very invested in the issue, and so you could tell that was through. But yet at conferences I would hear, oh, do you see what's happening to the counseling psychologist? It's been taken over by those folks, and it's all this kind of stuff, and my stuff won't get published anymore. My 10th piece on perfectionism won't get published.
Tell us how you really feel about it.
Well, it's funny that it's all a political process, and they're learning about it.
Scary is the word I use.
Yeah, so it's not just pure science, but then how does that affect what we know about folks? And then policies, and what role do IRBs play in accepting? Mm-hmm. Apparently, our IRB has some pretty stringent rules about what you can ask relative to race and ethnicity. That probably puts it in line with the census categories. And the census categories, again, they're not scientific. So it's we're asking these questions that are non-scientific. It's a methodological question that we have to kind of push. And then, so what would a study look like that really looked at this issue? Stanley Sue and Daryl Wing Sue did a study, the first of its kind. It was like a look at depression in Chinese Americans, and they said their just recruitment budget, because they got a grant to do it, was $2 million because of getting to people, building up trust, and this. It was incredibly, incredibly expensive to do the research. Now, that shouldn't be a reason not to do it, but the reality is that it would be very expensive. It takes time. You don't want to run into ethnic minority communities and say, hey, I've got this study, take it, and then run, because that's been done millions of times. You have to build up trust. You have to, I think, that's my own values, I think you have to give something back to the people that you're working with. That takes a lot of time, and that is not necessarily valued in the academic process. How much did you give back to the community while you were getting your research? That's never been, it wasn't a category on my FAR, but.
A lot of things weren't categories on our FAR.
Yeah, that's true.
The couple of things from what you're saying that concern me are that whatever the counseling psych journals are not reporting, the other psychology journals are doing 100 times worse.
That's right.
And secondly, that it reminds us we have to guard against promotion and tenure committees continuing to narrow and conveniently mm-hmm. use quantitative article or to support the quantitative route to have numbers, because this Sue article you're talking about could be worth 10 other articles on perfectionism.
Right.
but then when a committee who's not even thinking about these matters looks at this, then those doing this kind of research could sure. be very disadvantaged.
For doctoral dissertation committees, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of ways in which there's a lot of checks throughout the system. It's not just journal editors, just the whole way in terms of what you study, and then the breakdown is how doable is it, and then what do we expect, and what's a first, I keep hearing this stuff, it's a first step. Well, we've been at the first step process for many years, and what's the next step? And so that's one of the things.
Or seeing it everywhere. I just think about how we've presented this research, but it's been at cultural, cross-cultural, multicultural conferences. I want to start seeing this more, across the field and not just in the one group, like you were kind of saying, mm-hmm. the group of cross-cultural researchers or research. So.
Talking to those not in the choir.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, as an outsider, I would think that, personally, that's just what I think. I think most research is done that is geared toward being skewed to be published.
Right.
And in Vicki's field, if her doctor publishes something, then he's got a good chance to get more money for the Heart Center in Niagara Falls. So he would leave out data that would hurt his chances of getting more money for the concert.
I don't think that. I think a lot of it is basically IRBs. And if those people are people that you can really trust and depend on, they're people just like we are too. And if they're overworked and overwhelmed, and maybe some of the stuff from the IRB that I've seen come up in things, it's not there. It should be there, but even IRB, so it's difficult, and it's not a first step, and it's very frustrating, and when will it ever change?
Right.
With Vicki, I've seen a lot of research being done.
Here we go. Sorry, those parts.
Over the 10 years.
No deadlines. She's got. Well, we messed around for 6 months. We didn't do all of our studies, and then one night we put everything on.
That is not true.
Here we go. That sounds like grad school. Anyway, but yeah. That's fun. The whole role of who sponsors research, and you know, if it's going to cost a lot of money, then you have people who might be sponsoring it that might have their own stake in, and especially in the medical side, might have their own stake in it, and definitely personal stakes and personal opinions and stuff. I think that's something that we can't remove from the process. However, if journal editors were serious about asking these questions in a meaningful way, if you know, there is that bias towards publishing significant research. I mean, people have talked about starting the journal. I think there is a journal of non-significant research, which apparently, you know, in research class, we talk about being extremely important, but that will never make it to see the light of day in the journals, even though something that didn't work is very important information. Now, remember that for your dissertation, so yes. You can come back at me with all of this stuff.
That's right. Aren't y'all taping it? So you got it.
I just think that if this is something that we say we value, in our training we say this is important to us, in the research we are saying that we want to be focused more on this, that it should just be shown more. There should be more attention paid to it than it is, and that it shouldn't just be in racial and ethnic minority journals, but it should be more, I guess, diverse across different fields and subsets, and not just only the significant information be published. But getting to that point, unfortunately, is a very slow crawl right now.
Well, thank you for coming. Well, thanks for asking us. And thank you to Eliza and Kimber for jumping up here with us.
I hope you enjoyed today's podcast, which was sponsored by the Dean's Council on Diversity and the Center for Latino Achievement and Success in Education, both of which are in the UGA College of Education. Production services provided by the UGA College of Education Office of Information Technology.